All right. Well, good afternoon. So I am here with Julie Shuttlesworth, and Julie is our Assistant Vice President for Student Life in the Division of Student Engagement and Success. And so we are here to have a conversation this afternoon about Julie's experiences here at Texas A&M University Corpus Christi, and really more specifically about her legacy and traditions that she has helped create for us here at the university for our students. So first of all, Julie, thank you for being here with me this afternoon and carving out some time to have a conversation with me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm excited to join you. Thank you.
Okay, so let's start off first by telling us a little bit about your history personally with the university. Were you a student here as well before working here? Or if not, when did you start here at the university, or kind of what's your background here?
Sure. So I came to Texas A&M Corpus Christi in November of 2000 as the Assistant Athletic Director for Marketing and Promotions for Islander Athletics. And I had Dan Viola was the first athletic director for A&M Corpus Christi after we started sports. So he was actually tasked with starting Islander Athletics here at the university. He had been an associate athletic director at the University of Wyoming, which is where I did my undergrad degree at. I knew of him. He did not know me because I was a little freshman when he left, or an undergrad student. But he knew people that I worked with, and I had interned at Wyoming, and so that's kind of where the door opened to encourage me to apply for the role here. So, Islander Athletics was very small back in the day. The job that I did then is done by about five or six people now. So thankfully they've gotten a much bigger staff. And so, we were in on the ground level. So I came in on the second year of basketball ever here for A&M Corpus Christi, and we've come a long way since then. And I guess my memories then, I officed in Classroom East, which we literally just bulldozed this fall. It needed to have been bulldozed 23 years ago. There was a matching building right beside it at the time when I first came to campus, and it blocked my view to the ocean. But they bulldozed that one then because there was it was a faculty offices, and there was complaints about mold and ventilation and all that kind of stuff. And so they bulldozed it, and so that gave me a view out into the ocean, which I
Oh,
was very
nice.
excited to see. So yeah, so it's been 23 years here on campus.
Very cool. And so when did you start with the Student Engagement and Success Division within SEES? And because that kind of brings me into the time that I started here. Of course, you're already in that role and working on programming, but when did that transition happen?
Sure. So I left the university the first time back in 2004 and went to work here in Corpus Christi with a nonprofit, and then later with a private company. And I came back in the spring of 2015. And so I still knew people, obviously, that worked here. And my good friend Stephanie Box, who was working over housing at that time, had posted to her Facebook page that this job as a communication specialist for the Division of Student Engagement Success. And when I saw that, I wasn't looking for jobs. I was not actively pursuing anything, but it came across my Facebook feed. And as I read through it, it was, that's me, that's me, that's me.
That's cool.
And when I got to interview and when I got the position, I remember thinking on those first couple of days back that it felt like coming home that had just really been remodeled a lot, because university had grown a lot in the years, the 11 years in between. But it felt like home, and it felt like where I wanted to be. So that was really great coming back. So.
Very cool. Yeah, that's good. So for the purposes of the project that I'm working on and some things that we're doing, I am really curious and interested in some of the student programming and activities. More specifically for some of the big signature events. So take me back, if you can, to, I guess, from the beginning, or your beginning, 2000 area. What were some of the big signature events? And then what have you kind of seen over the years grow as far as our student engagement?
Yeah, so I think one of the things when I got here in 2000, I really kind of juggled back and forth in my brain was which came first, the chicken or the egg, on trying to drive attendance to Islander athletic events, basketball in particular. Mm-hmm. And so it was the concept of, well, if you get the community to show up, the students will think it's a great place to be and the students will come. Mm-hmm. Or if you get the students to show up, the community will think it's a great place to be and they'll buy tickets. And I had to do both, but my heart and my passion was that I was convinced that if we could get the students excited and the students to come to the games, that's what creates a college basketball environment. That's what creates a college baseball environment. And so if the students get excited and their school pride and school spirit, then the rest of the community will hop in as well. So that's a lot of where I focused my attention in those first few years. And with that, I got to partner with what was student affairs at the time. It wasn't student engagement success yet, but I got to partner with individuals over there, particularly in the student activities office. And we were working on, you know, the early years and early versions of Waves of Welcome. And so those, you know, that Welcome Back Week and all of the events and activities. We were on the very first homecoming committee. I think we started homecoming. So it wasn't the first year I was here. So I think it was the fall of 2001.
Okay.
To start working towards homecoming. And, you know, obviously we don't have football here at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. And so we made the decision to do that around a basketball game. You know, working, trying to get student involvement, student people there, alumni involvement through what was the Tarpon Foundation and is now the Islander Athletic Foundation. So, you know, kind of some of those really big core ones that started even early on in the early 2000s. And Waves of Welcome obviously is a huge tradition on our campus now. So I think there were over 50 events this last fall, cross campus, cross divisions, cross departments that are all working to welcome students back to campus. And then homecoming has been, you know, tremendous growth, that, you know, just the excitement around Islander basketball in general, but, you know, that transition of, hey, we're going to do homecoming. And it was really, I think that first year it was like kind of a barbecue inside. We were playing basketball at Memorial Coliseum back in the day before it was bulldozed. I used to call it the Hunk of Junk Dome because it smelled and it was cold and it was awful. So, you know, just kind of some in between sorts of things. And now, you know, the first year that I was here again, that I came back in 2016, we were still doing a homecoming parade. They'd brought a homecoming parade over the years. And there weren't very many people like watching the parade. There was a lot of people involved in being in the parade, but nobody was really watching the parade. And so we kind of transitioned. So 2016, we did a parade. And, you know, they had had a band that the athletic department had gotten kind of on the street in front of American Bank Center. And that next year, 2017, we're like, let's do something different. Let's try and do a block party. Let's do some food trucks. Let's do, you know, the students weren't into the parade. So we probably broke a few rules on putting a few food trucks on the street that first year. And we were in the muddy field beside the bank center. And then over those next like six or so years, that's really grown a lot. You know, we're in the parking lot behind the bank center. There's a lot of people. There's a really great vibe between both community and alumni coming back, as well as a lot of our students there and involved. And so I think that's been a fun tradition to watch grow over the years, as homecoming has kind of come into its own a little bit more. And then really the whole week's worth of activities that have blossomed out of some of those ideas. So it really feels like a tradition more now, than just a something we're pushing students to do and take part in. So students are actively wanting to be involved, which I think is awesome.
Very cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I actually didn't realize the history behind that for homecoming. And my experience last year, you're right, it has grown. It's huge. It's exciting. And I think that's a great point, that I do see the incorporation of both our students and the community, both. I mean, so that's a really neat thing. What other programs have you seen? Of course, I was involved with Family Weekend and our concert series. Talk a little bit about those programs.
Sure. So Family Weekend, we started the planning of Family Weekend in the fall of 2019 to do a spring event. Obviously, we all know what happened in the world in the spring of 2020. So a lot of that kind of tapered off. We looked at trying to move it and do it in the fall of 2020. That wasn't going to work. Spring 21 was still too much. And so the first Islander Family Weekend happened in the fall of 21. And it was actually really led out of the Academic Affairs Office. So Margaret Deccant was the lead on that, very much a committee sort of involvement, and really creating something out of scratch. So we'd done research, and you know, Texas A&M Corpus Christi as a Hispanic serving institution, and really just with college students generally across the country, parental involvement is a really important piece of student success. And so as families are involved and as students feel supported by their families, you know, students do better in their academics. And so Family Weekend was really born as a way to help connect families to the student experience. And so we always say that it's an opportunity for you to see campus through the eyes of your Islander. And so that started that first year. And the first year we did it, it was really a Friday program, that it was pretty much most of the day Friday, just a little bit on Saturday. And obviously we got some feedback from families that they were hoping to do more things on Saturday so that they could get there and be there easily on a weekend. And so the second year, 2022, we flopped it to a primarily Saturday event. And it's been a really great success. So, you know, there are the core pieces that there is a family lunch with the hosted by the president's office. We have Islander Wind Jam, which Wind Jam actually was born out of COVID. So Wind Jam started in the fall of 20 as we still needed to have some events for our students, that there were students kind of back on campus that fall, and that there needed to be something for them to do while still socially distanced and outside. And so that was actually the brainchild of our associate vice president and dean of students, Lisa Perez. So we were thinking about what could you do outside, and flying a kite seemed like, you know, you have to be spaced out. You can't be right next to somebody. And so that was such a popular event, and it was hosted by our Student Government Association, that we wanted to wrap that in and bring that as part of Wind Jam, or as part of Family Weekend, as a kind of an outdoor fun sort of an event. And so Student Government Association hosts that piece. And that's a really popular element to Family Weekend. And then in that first year, we got a laser show. And so we've got some really great, nice big buildings and some open lawn space, and having that something different that our students hadn't seen or had before has added a real nice piece to Family Weekend. And so, you know, we get really great feedback from the families. They love coming and seeing campus. It's grown every year. And so I think, you know, it's a big tradition at a lot of other institutions. And again, they wrap it around football, which, you know, we've actually created something that's more of a blend between academics and student life and athletics when we can get those pieces in a little bit better, not better. Well, I think it's better than a lot of other universities do, because a lot of other universities, it's, hey, come, here's a brunch and then go to the football game. And that's it for family weekend. And so there's a lot more interactive pieces for our students and their families for family weekend. So.
Cool. Do you have any interesting stories regarding family weekend or any experiences that you've had that are memorable? I was thinking while you were sharing that, this isn't about family weekend, but just a memory that I have about the work that we do. And sometimes things don't go according to plan. I don't remember when we had the 75th anniversary, and we were trying to put the banner, roll the banner off the top of the building.
Yeah. So
I was up there on the rooftop and trying to throw the confetti down. And then it was actually a kind of a scary moment because just let it go. But the wind took the thing.
Yeah.
And wrapped it, you know, spun the whole banner, twisted it up, and then the confetti, we're holding the thing up by ropes. And then one of the people up there was being pulled.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. We're
yeah, just let it go.
I think we're going to flip over the top of the.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. So I guess, and that kind of leads us into the concert. So,
as part
of the 75th anniversary, the concept, you know, was to have a big celebration and a big party here on campus. And so there was the, it's April 1st is the anniversary date for the university. And there was a event during the day, which was, you know, community and alumni and press and all that sort of thing. But we wanted to do something special for the students. We wanted to do a kickoff, a countdown to the anniversary. Mm-hmm. And we partnered with our health promotions program that already had a late night hypnotist coming in. And so we figured, you know, hey, let's do something kind of Times Square ball drop sort of countdown to midnight for this 75th anniversary, and use that as the launching point to announce what was our new spring concert, IsFest, which started in its first year as the 75th anniversary commemorative concert and food truck festival. And so we did all the things. We got this huge banner. I mean, it was like 40 feet long and 20 feet wide, and it was ginormous. And the concept was to drop it down the side of the university center, leave it displayed all year long, to commemorate the 75th anniversary, and really kind of use it as that ball drop moment. We had asked about practicing that in advance, and we had asked
if there
were going to be some ropes on the bottom, and we were assured that it was going to go smoothly. Best laid plans. It did not. Thankfully, IT was there, and they had, we'd gotten a big giant screen. And so we had the countdown, the 10, 9, 8 on the screen on the side of the building, big and bright and beautiful. And then we had the image of the banner, and we had the concert announcement that could be displayed up there as well. And so, yeah, we get to the countdown, and that it hits one, and they drop that banner, and I could see, and if you watch it back in the video replays, which thankfully we do have video replays, but see the one little corner, it started and it unrolled perfectly all the way down. But then that one little corner, the rope came loose and the air caught behind that banner, and it just started twisting it and yanking it. And so thankfully nobody got hurt. Thankfully they did drop the rope and nobody got yanked off the top of the university center. Unfortunately it was a one-time use banner because it did not get to be displayed for the entire year, because it basically just got shredded during that. So but you know, it was fun. The students, we had a dance party and cupcakes, and we got to announce the concert, which was a lot of fun, and so they had a great time. But yeah, sometimes your best laid plans and what you think is going to be awesome doesn't always work out the way you want it to.
Right. But at the same time, they do make for really good stories and brings us together in other ways as well. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
And I remember that first year. So we had the plain white tees.
So the concert, we had been talking about the concert for a while. So in the fall of 2019, again, Dr. Lisa Perez and I and Susan Latore, who was at the time the coordinator over our campus activities board, a few of our students had a meeting with Dr. Kelly Miller, president and CEO of A&M Corpus Christi, and talking about what are some of these big family tradition or some of these big campus traditions that we could build. And one of the things that the students wanted to see and Dr. Miller was really excited about was a concert with a national recording artist. And so we started working through that process. We started talking to partners down at Brewster Street and Concrete Street, trying to figure out where to even start, where to start on staging and contracting an artist and all of that sort of stuff. As we were working towards it, we were thinking, okay, well, maybe we can do something spring of 2000. Again, we all know where that went. Fall of 2000, spring of 21 again. And so in the fall, late fall of 21, we started talking about the anniversary, and we started talking about the 75th anniversary and what we could do big and commemorative. And the concert came back into, hey, we started down this path and we didn't get there. Let's see about trying to get this going. And so, again, Lisa and Susan and I kind of started working and partnering and talking with a booking agency and trying to figure out dates and locations and times. And part of it was, well, where are we going to do this at? And what are you going to do that makes it a big enough event that's really going to attract the students? And so that's where the concept of a festival vibe came through. It's where we decided to do food trucks. Food trucks are super popular and with our students. And then trying to do it over on what we talked about doing it on was we talked about doing it on the Momentum Rec fields, because it's already pre-fenced. And so you could have that security perimeter. You could park the food trucks right there in that parking lot directly adjacent to it. And it would be all inclusive. You already had lights, you had power, you had all the things you needed. When we started talking with the production company and we started figuring out the staging, there's two types of staging, which none of this we knew. We didn't know anything before in the first rounds as we were trying to figure this out. So there's two types of staging. There's a stick built staging where they come in, they put down the plywood, they build out a stage. Or there's the semi-truck type of staging that is basically a big giant semi-truck that is just like a transformer, that it comes and it unfolds and it raises up big and gorgeous and beautiful stage. There is a significant price difference between having to have all of the people and all of the hands build out a stage for you versus having a truck pull up and transformer itself out into a stage. And when I mentioned to Kevin Martin, who's our director of recreational sports, and Anne DeGeish, who's our associate vice president for student engagement success, that we were contemplating driving a semi truck onto the rec sports fields, we got a resounding no from that. That was not going to work. And that's when we pivoted, and that big empty lot that as at the corner of Ennis Joslyn and Nile became home to IsFest. And so it was a whole lot more on the logistics that at that point than we had to bring in fencing and bring in additional porta potties and bring in power. But it allowed us to have a large enough scope and venue to be able to have that sort of a big event. It was a huge undertaking. It was a ton of people across campus that were included in the event. The first year we had limited the tickets to 3,000 tickets. We weren't sure exactly what that would look like or how that would hold. And I very distinctly remember a conversation with Alan Gutierrez, our chief of police, during the concert that night, standing up beside the stage and looking over at this field and him going, hey, we can hold three or four times that number in this field. Wow. So really setting the goals and the expectations big. But yeah, so we had the plain white tees the first year, really popular. We had students, faculty, staff, a lot of people come and enjoy, and really they enjoyed the food trucks. The artist was great. The weather was beautiful. We had a gorgeous sunset over the field right at the very end. And it was just kind of a very fun and chill islandery sort of vibe. Year two did not provide the same sort of a thing. So year two, we already had a plan, right? So we had this plan. We pulled off this concert the year before. We had more time in advance that we were planning. We used Dayglow as our second artist. So, and we changed the name to IsFest as an ongoing sort of a event, but it decided to pour buckets, like the most rain we have had in like 3 years during the week prior to the concert. And the concert itself, the forecast was that that day was going to be nice, but like all the way up to it was going to be awful. And we tried really hard to have it out in the field. I went out and drove my husband's one-ton truck up onto the field and got it stuck. And I went,
oh no,
there's no way we're going to get a semi truck up onto this field. So we did a very last second pivot. And we pulled it into the parking lot adjacent to the parking garage. And it was great. I mean, it went tremendously well. I thought for sure the night before the stage was going to tip over because the wind was so awful and strong.
But, yeah, I remember.
We had a beautiful day, and we had Dayglow as the artist, and the students loved it. And so I think those two successes in a row have really cemented the concert into being an ongoing tradition. So
definitely, yeah. Just a side note, when we talked about the field, tell me about the attention we had to give to even the birds that lay are nesting, I guess, in the field. Because those are some true details that sometimes we wouldn't consider, that we have to think about these things being in an island type space and using these fields for a concert.
Yeah, absolutely. So the field presented a lot of different challenges that would not have been in like the parking lot in year two, or in if we'd been able to do it over on the rec fields. But ants and bugs and fire ants, which I think, Joe, you actually managed to step in a big pile. Our facilities team did a great job getting those treated so that it was a safe place. But as part of that, keeping the lawn good and finding the treatment, we have endangered birds that nest here on the coast of South Texas. And one of the endangered little piper birds decided that she wanted to have a nest and a baby and some eggs right there where our parking was for the event. And so we literally just caution taped off around her, and she had her own parking space. And we parked the cars in around her, but she had her own parking space for the first year. But then in the second year, we had, you know, gone out and put down some bird scaring tape, some metal reflective tape.
Okay.
Encourage her to, there's a lot of places nest in the area, and encourage her and her friends to nest anywhere. She could have had a nest anywhere except for where I was trying to put the semi truck. So we did just where that stage for the semi truck is. We put some bird tape to try to encourage her to go anywhere else. So and we didn't have to deal with it because we moved it over to the parking lot. But yeah, that definitely adds a different degree of fun and challenge.
Yeah, definitely. How would you say, just based on your experience and your time, do you notice, I mean, yeah, let's go back to 2000 and until now, but do you notice a sense of growth and belonging, like for students with these types of events and inclusion? I mean, are you seeing, like, you know, more students out together interacting? I mean, again, going back to 2000 all the way up to these most recent events.
I think Absolutely, I do. So, you know, one of the things when I came to the island, I had come from different schools that had had really strong student activities, student life, school spirit sorts of traditions. And I knew coming here to A&M Corpus that we weren't at that point yet. We were still kind of in the transition from being a commuter school, that it was a lot of people that were just coming in and out on a daily basis. And not really, this wasn't their first choice a lot of times. Mm-hmm. A&M Corpus Christi was not their first choice school. But what I think is awesome of where we've gone and where we've grown is that now, you know, in 2023, and even pretty much since I came back in 2015, we're no longer a commuter school. We're no longer a second choice backup plan school. We're the first choice for a lot of our students. And our students really want that traditional and involved campus experience and organizations that they can belong to and events and traditions that they can come to and attend and that connection amongst each other. And so I think it's awesome. Just the difference of how far we've come on students who want to be in a place that they belong and have found either activities or events or organizations or just their crew here on campus to belong and get involved with and come and attend these events with. And so I think that's a lot of what homecoming, the concert, family weekend, Islander Lights, a lot of those major events are really that traditional campus feel, those traditions that you come back to even after you've graduated, and that you want to, you feel like you belong here on the island, that, you know, the island has become home for you. And I think that's a huge step just in the 23 years that I've been involved at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, to see how far we've come. That, you know, you see people wearing A&M Corpus Christi attire on campus, out in the community. Like, you couldn't find it when I first got here. You couldn't even find shirts. And that's, we gave away a lot of t-shirts in those first few years to try and get people wearing, you know, the Islander logo, the Texas A&M Corpus Christi name. And so I just think that, yeah, we've come a really long ways in the last 23 years.
Very cool. Couple more follow-up things here in the last few minutes. What would you say are, you know, from your personal experience, your personal perspective, what are the things that you value the most about working here or being a part of this university or this campus? What do you value the most about Texas A&M Corpus Christi?
So what I still love and have always loved is that I love the small campus feel, and we're no longer a small campus. You know, we're 11,000-12,000 students on a regular basis. That's a mid-level college campus across the country. But because we're on the island, that helps, I think, keep that proximity of services, that proximity of classes, the proximity of the events, that everything is just right there and close and accessible. And I think that helps increase that sense of belonging, because you walk across campus and you see 27 people, you know, mm-hmm. and it helps build that community, I think. And I do feel like, I feel like people want to be at A&M Corpus, that whether it's the faculty, the staff, the students, it is a place that they want to be. And that, that really also helps in that sense of belonging, and that sense of pride and spirit. And I've seen a lot of growth even more recently, you know, in the 8 years that I've been in student engagement and success, a lot of growth of that identity. You know, student government in that time started the Blues Day Tuesday tradition, mm-hmm. and they put up the Home of the Islanders sign on the side of the CI Science over walk. And there's a lot of those sorts of tradition pieces. So Beach Bash, which we didn't even have a chance to talk about, mm-hmm. but is the kind of culmination of Waves of Welcome and that kickoff to the year with fireworks and fun and hosted by the president's office. I mean, that's a huge, huge piece too. So I think all of those elements that we've really strived to build tradition in the last 20 plus years, and that the students themselves are now, you know, student government taking over and working to build additional traditions. And so I think that that's a, it says a lot for how far the university's come.
Last question for you. What would you say is your legacy here? What is your, I guess if we were to look back, being that this is a historical project and that's where we're talking about the history of things. If your name was in the textbook of Texas A&M Corpus Christi, what does it say? What does it talk about? What is your historical impact here and your legacy on this campus?
You know, I think I would hope that it says something about building Islander pride. So, you know, those very first days walking on to campus in 2000, and I mean, you had to beg students to come to events. I remember having my interns, we'd go to Walmart and we'd get white sheets because they were the cheapest thing we could find, and we would paint them with temper paint saying game today sort of stuff. And we did a lot of kind of guerrilla marketing to get them involved and to attend things. And I think that a lot of the work that I've done in those early days in athletics and then throughout my time with student engagement success of helping to build traditions, helping to communicate with and market those traditions to students, helping to have them identify with these major events and these school pride initiatives and these school traditions. And that I would hope that people see that I've helped contribute to the increase of school spirit and Islander pride.
I like that. I agree. I think that's a big part. One of the things that I've learned from you and observed from you too is in that pride is branding and making sure that things look nice and look professional and appear that way, because that's a high level. And when we have that high level of branding and presence, that adds to pride and adds to the spirit. And so I definitely, I do see that. I agree with that.
I think, and along those lines, it would probably have a little asterisk beside it that I was the any color but blue Grinch. That when it came to t-shirts that we were handing out and giving away, that I was passionate about. Nope, I don't care. Blue, we're giving out blue. It has to be blue. Or green occasionally, but so you're right that just trying to instill some of those things that are just intuitive at the larger universities with hundreds and hundreds of years of tradition, those aren't intuitive yet at A&M Corpus. They're starting to become intuitive that we don't wear burnt orange t-shirts, we wear blue t-shirts. So those sorts of things I think are hopefully things that I've helped contribute to.
Absolutely. Well, Julie, thank you so much for your time and being a part of this brief historical analysis and review from your perspective. I know that we could continue on for hours and hours, and maybe I'll create the Texas A&M Corpus Christi historical podcast, and we can
love that.
Have all these different episodes with different people. I think it would be a great contribution. So thank you so much. I'm gonna hit the